Audio.
When I look at your legwork, that is like one of the things that really jumps out at me, and that I would really like to help you develop just more tools in your toolkit for how you use your legs. Hey y'all, I'm Ryan Devlin, and welcome to this Struggle Climbing Show Pro Clinic with Coach Nate Drolet. Guys, I'm really hyped for this one because Nate and I are diving deep into not one, but two pro clinics focused on movement. So in this first one, Nate was gracious enough to analyze my climbing and connect for a consultation, which you will get to be a fly on the wall for. So as you probably know, I usually fade out the Pro Clinic episodes like midway through and make the full episode available to patrons and subscribers only. That's how I pay the bills over here. So thank you. I love you. But guess what? Today, I'm just going to make the whole thing available to everyone because it was a really fascinating look into how an elite level coach works with a client from the jump. And while he's looking specifically at my climbing, there's a lot in here that you, my crusher listener, are going to be able to glean with regard to self-assessment, identifying areas of strength and weakness, and just how to think about various types of movement in general. Nate also suggests a few specific drills for me to try here, and those will no doubt help you to improve as well, whether you relate to my climbing style or not, because basically I need to improve everywhere. So there's definitely something in here that is going to work for you. Now, y'all probably know Nate from his work with Power Company Climbing and the Power Company podcast. Nate, along with Chris Hampton, have been doing a really good deep dive on all things movement for the past couple of months now. It's such good stuff, you guys, and I highly recommend you sign up for their newsletter and also join their Patreon or Apple subscription to gain access to all that they are doing on this important topic. I am a subscriber. They just released an exclusive episode about self-assessment in movement that was really, really good and goes hand in hand with what you're about to hear today. I just couldn't think of anybody better than Nate to help me with my movement, as he has spent a ton of time climbing here at the Red, including on my current 13A project. And then just as a coach, he has a fantastic reputation and is a specialist in helping climbers to assess and improve their technique indoors and out. Now today we start general and then get a little bit more specific as we go, and Nate then even analyzes some of my climbing videos that he asked me to send him in real time, and it's really cool to see. So I'm putting all of those videos as well as his assessment of them up on Patreon, and you can check those out for free. If you're not a patron right now, you can get a free 7-day trial, and that'll also get you access to the entire library of pro clinics and bonus episodes that I've done, more than 40 hours of bonus content. So you can check that out at patreon.com/thestruggleclimbingshow. Thank you. I love you. Guys, these next two pro clinics might just be the most powerful resource that you're going to find in podcast form when it comes to leveling up your climbing. So let's get psyched and move with intention with Nate Drolet. I am a little bit curious about like the constraints that come into play in analyzing somebody's climbing based on video versus like if you had just been in the gym with me, and that might be worth talking about in order to set the stage for those who are going to be listening to this. It should be noted, I guess, that we haven't had a chance to climb together in person. So this is, you know, going to be based on some videos that I sent you of me on my project, as well as some specific videos that you asked me to shoot and that I did at the gym over the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, no. And I would say for this, yeah, just be like as selfish with this time as possible. I think like, yeah, ask all the questions. Cause yeah, I mean, even though it is about you, like I think a lot of, you know, so much of climbing is relatable at all levels to so many different people. So I think, yeah, any specific question you have, no matter how like selfish it feels specifically to you, ask it and let's dive into it. But yeah, I think as far as watching videos of you versus seeing you in person, it is tough because it's like there's so much situational to each individual day. So the way I normally go through and analyze videos is I will kind of just take notes anytime I see anything. So if I'm like, oh, that's just interesting. What is that? I'll like scribble a little note about it. And then once I've gone through all of these things, I'll look and see like, are there patterns? So let's say for instance, like, you know, maybe there's some random video of you sport climbing and you're fumbling clips on the right side a ton. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Maybe he's really bad at clipping on the right for some reason. For all I know, you may have like closed your thumb in a car door. But because I'm not there, and you may have, like, you know, this could have been from a year ago, you forgot to mention it, you know, I'm not going to make a huge deal out of it unless I see every video you missing clips on the right side. So that's kind of how I go through with this, is I'm looking more like more big picture. And then the more I can see, which it was helpful, you sent me a ton of videos, like the more I see things occur, the more I'm like, okay, I don't think this was a one-time occurrence. Like, and also because climbing is just so unique, like there's so many different things that sometimes it's like, oh, this was just a weird situation. So I try and find these big patterns.
Cool.
Obviously, it's a little harder with video, like in person. I can, like, if I see something funny, I'll just be like, hey, Ryan, do that again. I'd like to see you do that climb again. Or, hey, go over here, do this climb, but don't use that left hand hold. Like, no reason, just want to see what happens. And that's nice because I can kind of A-B test things really fast. But yeah, fortunately, you sent me a ton of stuff. And I think, like, I was able to see enough that I feel pretty confident in what I've seen.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm excited and terrified at the same time.
Good. Perfect. Okay. So I've got a handful of questions for you just to kind of like get to know you a little bit better. And for anyone listening, like, this is more or less like we talked for like 10 minutes the other day, but this is more or less our first like real conversation. What is your athletic background like?
I've always been very athletic, kind of jack of all trades, master of none, but played ice hockey and lacrosse in school, you know, soccer as a little kid, but then like in like high school and into college, I played ice hockey and lacrosse, midfield, kind of the thinking man's position. I've never been like super aggressive. I've never liked a lot of contact. It's funny, I played two contact sports, but I would avoid contact, but yeah. I really liked to design plays, you know, assist, usually had more assists than goals, that kind of thing. And winter sports like snowboarding. I did a lot of snowboarding for a long time. Grew up in Michigan, you know, went and spent a lot of time in Colorado. Didn't start climbing until I was 30. Was a climber, did like a lot of tree climbing and that kind of thing. And like high levels of coordination, always been like very coordinated, kind of anything that I would try to pick up, I could typically do with a decent level of coordination kind of right from the get. Biking, I raced mountain bikes for a season of my life, kind of high school into college, did a lot of like mountain bike racing and riding, that kind of thing. Yeah, nothing extraordinary, but you know, I like to dabble in a lot of things, I guess.
Oh, that's really rad. So you talked about kind of being strategic with like lacrosse and hockey in climbing. How do you feel like that shows up?
Though I don't know how good I am at it, I delight in problem solving. I think that's why I like traditional climbing as well. It's like even thinking about like placements and what's the rack that I need to put together and, you know, how am I going to plan out my gear for this climb. That's not the season that I'm in now that I'm at the red, you know, sport climbing, but I think I still take that delight and that excitement and that passion into trying to understand a route and beta and trying to come up with beta that works for me, that maybe doesn't work for my friends, you know, that kind of thing. Like I've never been the strongest, like when I was playing like hockey or lacrosse or whatever, like I would always have to kind of use my mind to try to make up for it. And I think in climbing, that's to some extent what I try to do as well, as I try to figure out like what's a way that I can do this that doesn't require like max physical strength.
Yeah.
I guess that would be maybe where it carries over. But again, I'm not quite sure how... How much like being excited about something and being good at it are two different things. And so I obviously have a lot of work still to do on the getting good at it side.
So you talked about like finding beta different than your friends or climbing partners often. How would your climbing partners describe your climbing?
Relaxed, probably efficient, slow, probably like on the slower side maybe. Although I've been trying to work on that. You know, these are things I've kind of been working on. Not particularly powerful, I would say, is probably, you know, something that would describe. Usually I have to find ways to do cruxes that like my friends don't, you know, like I had to find kind of ways to skip moves or something. I'm thinking about like that 12B at Military Wall, which is my first 12B Tissue Tiger, where there's like kind of a very defined like bolt or so in the middle right before you throw to that last like kind of India shaped hold that's like maybe the singular crux move, but where there's a couple like
pinch hold
exactly, but like right before that, kind of getting up into that, there's some like kind of half pad or quarter pad kind of couple crimp moves, and couldn't do them. And so like you like rest right before that in this like ear feature. And I just found like a way to get really scrunchy and grab it as an undercling. And basically like I just skipped the two crimps and just like went right up to like this pocket. And so, you know, and I didn't see that on YouTube. I didn't see it, like none of my friends were doing it. I just like, I couldn't do it. So I hung out there for long enough to try and just like figure out like, okay, well, if I can't do this, I could either like go try to get stronger for 6 weeks or I could just try to skip these moves. So like that's kind of the place, but you know, it's normal to get into a box. Like I only just last session out on Force, Dave Scott was out there and he was talking about some alternative betas for the top and he's done the route a million times. And I had just like done the top the same as all of my other friends, like Kyle Fisher and Tom Cunningham, like these people who are much stronger than me were doing it. And then Dave Scott's like, well, I'm weak and this is how I do it. And I was like, oh God, I guess there is a different way. So it's not always apparent. Again, I don't know how proficient I am with it, but oftentimes I have to find that I wandered from your original question on like how my friends describe me. But I would say like, yeah, kind of a little bit more like relaxed, flowy, a little on the slower side and like not particularly powerful. And so as a result of that, that's why I've had to get creative on some crux sequences.
Cool. No, and anytime you like, the more you talk, the better, like the more I can learn. This is great. So yeah, I love tangents. It's all fantastic. Actually, speaking of tangent, maybe one of my favorite Dave Scott stories ever. He was projecting swing line. And this was back when I lived out in Kentucky. And an 8-year-old Brook Rapitu came out and climbed it. And she was talking with him afterwards. And it was like her and her mom both climbed it back to back. And he was projecting it. And she was talking with him and, you know, being just like super sweet. And was like, oh, how's it going, all this? He was like, oh, you know, I've been trying it for a long time. It's been a long project. And 8-year-old Brooke Rabbitou looked at him and said, have you tried power training? Which is like the most amazing thing. Like, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what did he say?
Yeah, what do you say? Like, it's enough of an insult to injury to have like, you've got an 8-year-old just like hike right. your project on like a weekend, you know, like a school field trip, essentially. And yeah, then like, have you tried power training?
Oh God, that's so funny.
No, I haven't.
I love it. I'm going to see him out there next week. I'll have to see if he recalls that. I'm sure he does. How do you not recall an 8-year-old burning you off your project and then suggesting some power training to you? That is genius.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and he was like great spirits about it, but it was, yeah, just, I was like, that's incredible.
Good on her. Swing line is nails. Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
How long will you try a move before you deem it too hard?
Good question. I think there's a pretty big disparity from indoors versus outdoors. So I'm much less dedicated indoors. So like I'll try a boulder problem at like on the sets at the gym or on the moon board. And I might only try it 2 or 3 times and just be like, that's not for me and just move on. But if you get me on a rope, if you get me on a project, I am pretty determined or patient when it comes to that, especially if I'm psyched on the route. It really, like, I guess it's just like a matter of psych, you know, like, do I really want to do this? I do think I, in both scenarios, am fairly quick to decide on my beta though, and kind of deem it like this is the right thing. And only later on, if I'm like getting stopped, you know, I'm running out of gas or something like that, will I go back and say, well, maybe it wasn't the right thing. Maybe I just like, it worked once and I was like, yes, that's it. But yeah, like on the Force, for example, part of my like kill criteria, you guys did like a kill criteria, you and Chris, I think, or maybe it was just Chris on one of his like kind of compilation episodes. I don't quite remember, but like kill criteria came up, which is like, you know, set these benchmarks for what you want to achieve on a project. And if you don't hit it by that day, you kill it. That's it. You know, like it's...
Oh, the quitting strategy.
Yeah, exactly. Quitting strategy. So,
yes.
You know, kind of trying to take sunk cost theory out of it and this kind of thing. Like, it's not about what you've put into it. It's about like, have you hit this thing, this goal that you set? And if you haven't, you cannot, you have to walk away. And so one of my first kill criteria on the Force was, you know, to do all the moves, but then it was to go from the ground through the first crux, that bottom, like you do the dyno to start it. Then you work through those pockets. And then you get into that rest. And yeah. I managed to be able to do that pretty early on. But what I discovered later on, like after probably too long of time was that, yes, I could go from the ground to the rest, but I was doing it in a very like suboptimal, kind of inefficient, way more effort than necessary way. Yes, it got me there, but I was like flamed and it took forever to recover and I wasn't recovering. And so I went some time, again, probably too long, but then I recognized that and then reworked that bottom portion to now do it in like probably less than half the moves is what I was. You know, now I can go from the ground into that first rest in like 30 seconds, whereas it was like 2 minutes before and I was taking shakes and chalking up and like making multiple moves through those pockets where now it's like three moves. I was doing like seven moves before. So anyway, I think that to your original question, how often will I try a move before I deem it too hard? I'll usually walk away from a boulder in the gym pretty quickly and just say like, oh, it's not for me, or I'm not strong enough for that. Possibly why I've been at a V5 plateau in my climbing gym for 5 years. But if you put me on a rope, I think I'm far more likely to try things and try and get creative and figure it out. But I don't tend to force myself to. So like thinking about like the top of the force or whatever, it's not like I set something in my head, like if a coach had been out there or something like that, where it was like, okay, yes, you just sent the top there, but now try to send it four different ways or whatever. Like I don't push myself to do that. Oftentimes, like I'll do it. I'll get some like input from my friends on how they do it or whatever, because I'm like climb with much stronger people than myself. So they've typically done everything that I'm getting on. And they'll give me some really good like insights and beta. And I'll say, well, they're smart and good and talented, so that's probably it. And so then when I do get that to work, then I'm like, okay, that's how it's done. Possibly an area of opportunity for me there.
Potentially. You know, and especially because you have access to boards. So that, like if the impermanence of gym boulders is one of the things that also holds you back from going back to them more often. Mm. That can be nice. I'm also just a fan of board climbing for sport climbers, especially somewhere like the Red, just because it's nice to be able to come back to things like over a longer period versus, yeah, sets just turn over really fast if you're like spending so much of your time sport climbing and only a little bit of time bouldering.
Yeah.
Like you just can't get the necessary reps in. If you're like, I have one hard bouldering session a week, it's like, you know, you just don't have the time.
Yeah, and I think it's 100%. It's that I think comes into play, and I also think there's a mental barrier here. Just as I like, maybe I'm only just now kind of recognizing it consciously. Like when I said, like, oh, I've been at this V5 plateau for forever, 5 years or whatever. Where like I've never climbed a V6, outdoors, indoors, on the gym sets, on the moonboard.
Interesting.
And I probably should be able to, considering like, you know, my metrics, but I just haven't. And so that might be like something that's, you know, that's in my head as well, as I'll get on something that's at my limit and won't make fast progress on it. And then I think to myself, well, like, I'm just not ready for that one yet. I'll come back to it. Let me drop it down to a V4, work some more hard V4s. And then, you know, I'll be ready for that one soon. And I've probably been telling myself that for some years now.
Okay. It sounds like there could be something there.
Yeah.
What's the hardest part about climbing V5 for you?
Hardest part about climbing V5. I mean, I think the hardest part about climbing anything hard for me right now is like in terms of like singular hard moves or like short sequences, is that I find it uncomfortable to try really hard to like have full body tension, like try hard. And I think if I'm going to psychoanalyze, that probably comes from working so hard to be as relaxed as humanly possible on every move that I do, like on the things that I climb mostly at the Red. And I started climbing, like my entry point into outdoor climbing was trad climbing, granite, slab.
If you're trying hard, something's going wrong.
Totally. Like, you don't want to try hard, right? You want to be flowy, chill, conserve energy, make sure your placements are good, climbing suboptimal or submaximal and you know, well under your grade, because like my placements were not the best, you know, like I was new. So yeah, that's been, I think,
yeah,
it's really hard to like get on something and just be like, let's make everything tense. You know, it just feels like it feels really weird, to be perfectly honest. I've been trying on the moonboard, I've been, you know, doing more moonboarding, but it's uncomfortable for me to like try that hard and then like maybe make a move or a half of a move, you know, to like dump the tank, like expend full energy and like not make it up 80 feet is weird.
Totally. Do you think there's any overlap between, I know this is kind of a leading question, but you talked about being very strategic and always needing to find your own ways with hard moves. Do you think there's a connection between that and struggling to try hard? Like, is there something in your mind where you're like, if you feel like you need to try really hard, it's like, ooh, am I just doing it wrong? Should I be trying some other method?
For sure. Yeah, no doubt. I think I'm constantly in pursuit of the path of least resistance. And maybe that doesn't exist. Maybe I just need to try maximally hard and then go recover on that jug over there. But yeah, there's a discomfort around that I think has maybe prevented me from like accepting that and just saying like, yeah, let's do that. Because again, I think I still put myself a bit in this like Red River Gorge box where I'm like, okay, you know, it's the endurance that's going to get me to the top. It's the fitness that's going to get me to the top. It's the relaxed climbing. And many of the climbs that I'm on probably is a pretty decent golden rule. Though if like we look at like kind of my metrics, my endurance doesn't seem to be the thing that's particularly holding me back. So yeah, I don't know. There's maybe a little bit of dissonance around that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's such a Red River Gorge thing. And honestly, like watching you climb, there's a couple of like, and like I've spent a ton of time climbing in the Red. Like that is, you know, where I've done most of my sport climbing. The climbing there is so stylistic that there are some pretty consistent boxes that people fall into just simply because like they can aid in performance. And I definitely noticed that a little bit with you in a certain spots. Yeah. And that's something we'll definitely get to. You had talked about climbing with better climbers. Mm-hmm. And you're saying a lot of your partners are better than you. You know, you mentioned like Kyle Fisher, Thomas Cunningham, guys I've climbed with, great climbers. When you look at them, what like, you're like, man, these are good climbers. What is it that makes them good in your eyes?
Good question. I think Thomas and Kyle are two different people, but you know, like some commonalities between them are, for what I notice and like kind of what I respect, is this ability to climb on pretty consistently hard stuff and move through it, you know, like with flow, like with like really good pacing, and then recover on maybe not such good stuff. Like it's not like they're like popping out to like some mega jugs. They're just like climbing through some really hard stuff, you know, with great pacing. And I tend to see them both are very good about like keeping really close to the wall. You know, I tend to, like, if I'm like analyzing some of my climbing, like I kind of feel like I sag my butt down a lot. Like I climb so relaxed that I'm like, it's not that kind of vacuum style, you know, climbing where you're like really close. And I think they're really strong boulderers, both of them, which I'm not. And so like they can like really like bear down on some hard stuff, punch it, and then recover. Very twisty, very, very good about, I think, like just again, keeping kind of hips close, being efficient with like how they're dealing with the angles and like the forces of gravity. I guess that's what jumps out. I mean, I've spent quite a bit of time with them at the dark side recently, as Thomas has been doing a lot of work on swimline, and Kyle's just been kind of climbing everything else just like for fun. And
nice.
Yeah. 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 And I would say also like, and this is like very specific, but like I noticed with both of them and others that I climb with that are quite strong, Max, for example, who you've worked with, their ability to like really lock off on things and I've never been much of a crimper, full crimper, almost never, half crimp. If I can avoid it, I do, you know, like I tend to drag everything. And also just like locking off hasn't been something that like has been like super comfortable for me to do. I'm trying to get better at it, you know, but I notice like those guys can like really like lock off, and like reach up and grab the next thing and just, you know, continue to move at a good pace. That's kind of what jumps out. It's pretty vague.
No, that's good. That's like... yeah, that's all super helpful. Yeah, I think. All right. So kind of going through your climbing, the way I analyze it is, I was saying earlier, I make a big checklist. I kind of go through and then I see, okay, where is this like becoming redundant to where I have multiples of the same? Maybe I'll scratch some things out where it's like, this showed up once, but I don't think it's really a thing. So I'm going to kind of list off what I think are the top points. And these are in no specific order other than like I noticed them and they stayed on the list. So we'll kind of go through and we'll talk about it. And then we can, after that, kind of go through your videos.
Sick.
All right. Ooh, actually, I noticed you got a Scarpa hat on. Are you a Scarpa athlete?
As are you.
Right on. Right. I am, yes. Okay, I was going to talk shoes with you at some point. I noticed you wear a lot of very stiff shoes.
I don't know much about shoes, Nate. Let me just like...
Okay.
I can just out myself on my shoe game here. I did just pick up, because I've been wearing the Instincts VSs on the Proj, and I just got some, the softer ones, the VSRs. So I was going to start breaking those in, and you know, I do like the Instincts a lot, and I find them like very helpful as I've been trying to toe into some of those like, you know, pockets and all that on the overhung route that I do out there. I also just got some Origins. Mm. For the gym that are, you know, a little softer that I had probably in the most recent videos that I sent out to you that I was just kind of messing around with. But yeah, to say that I don't know much about shoes is like an overstatement. I know almost nothing about shoes except that I've been wearing Scarpas for a decade and I love the way they fit and the way they feel, but I'm not like the type of climber where it's like, I'm really thinking about the shoes for this specific route, or one shoe on my left foot and a different one on my right foot because of that crux move needs to have a smear or whatever. So yeah, if you've got any shoe beta for me, I'd be totally open to it.
Cool. Yes, I was going to recommend going softer, and especially in the red, just like you can't go too soft of a shoe. Like the Rock is super gritty. The holds are like, a lot of the footholds are more slopey than anything. So a soft shoe that's still slightly downturned works really well. So yeah, and I know this is like, feels silly talking about shoes, but yeah, I would look into like, the Chimera is like a hybrid in terms of how stiff it is. It won't feel ultra soft. So like, it won't feel crazy soft to you. I think that could be a good one. The Veloce Lace, which is marketed as an intermediate shoe, but is like, there's not a 514 in the red that you couldn't do in those shoes. Like, I think they're fantastic, super comfy, very sensitive. And we'll talk about this later. I think like getting you more connected to your feet is going to be something that's really important. And I actually think a little bit softer of a shoe will do that. You'll just have like a little bit more dexterity, essentially. You know, I mean, imagine if you're like, the way I explain it to people is like, you know, if I asked you to put on a pair of ski boots and go like running through a gravel parking lot, like you're not going to be very athletic.
Right.
Like, and that is what stiff climbing shoes are like. I mean, they're great for if you need to step on tiny little edges. Yeah. Like, you know, Scarpa VSs, Boostix, things like that. Amazing. You're going to feel nothing, but your shoe isn't going to move. Like you're going to stand on absolutely nothing. But if we want to feel athletic, if we want really great connection with our legs, like it has to start with great connection with our feet. So yeah, I would go with something a little softer like Chimera, maybe Veloce Lace, but VSR is a great start.
Sick.
For sure.
Well, yeah, I've got the VSRs that I'm just starting to break in. So I was going to try those out on Wednesday when I go out, but yeah, maybe doing like one burn in the Instincts and one burn in the Veloces, and then like so that I can really like feel physically and also just kind of like intellectually feel what that difference is could be helpful. I appreciate that. I think that's a good tip.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would say maybe go like a half size down from your Instinct size, just because they're so soft, you can like fit them a bit more snug. But yeah, I think that'll help. All right. So back to the actual checklist. I like had remembered shoes were on the list, but hadn't put them down. Okay. So very first one is whenever you twist, like you predominantly twist from your low body, like your lower body. So you will like drop knee and you'll kind of move your hips, but you don't move from your shoulders very much. And so what this does is it basically just limits how much actual reach you get. Like there's a couple techniques that happen in climbing where we pay more attention to almost like the thing that the technique's named for than the act, like what's actually happening with the body. So for instance, like pogo is a great example. Drop knee is another one. And even like knee bars, like a knee bar, yeah, like the space you fill is important, but what you do with the rest of your body is almost more important than the actual like knee-to-toe distance. But drop knees are the exact same. Like, essentially, all a drop knee is, you know, if you think about, like, kind of rolling back and forth with your chest and getting a little bit of extra reach like that, we can do that. And then we get even more reach when we reach with our, we twist with our hips as well. And then when we drop knee, we're twisting all three together. So we're getting a ton of reach. But what's super common is people will see it. They're like, oh, drop knee. I need to drop that leg in. And so that's what they do. But they don't twist from the upper body as well. So they end up limiting how much reach they actually get out of it. And you're like, you're not bad at it. Like, some people truly, like, it's like Frankenstein shoulders, like these stay perfectly square and the lower body moves. Like, you don't fully do that, but like there's a little bit of a disconnect between the two. And because you're kind of a twisty climber, like, this is something I think that would be worth improving.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting. I was thinking about the drop knee that I do coming off of the last rest on the last bolt of the force. And maybe when we get into the video section, we can kind of pull it up and talk about that. But like the last time out, I actually ditched the drop knee. You may have seen, I think, in the last like video that I sent coming off of that.
Because yes,
while it did help me to reach over with the left hand, it almost didn't help more than just finding a slightly lower foot with my left foot, not dropping the knee and just kind of reaching up. Making those first two moves right off the rest a little bit easier, I think would be pretty massive for me, because then you're into the crux. But like, they're just reachy enough where I think that that's an interesting note, where either I need to maybe work on making that drop knee more effective by twisting more, you know, getting more reach out of it, to your point, or like maybe it's not worth it because I'm making this extra twisty, you know, body movement, and then I have to unwind from it and all of that, and it's not really gaining me that much at the end of the day. Like, it feels good in the lower body, to your, you know, to the point that you just made, but like, it's still very reachy for me. Yeah, I'm curious how I work on that, aside from having somebody yell at me and say, you know, twist your upper body more with your leg.
Honestly, like, this one is one of the easiest things to fix itself, in the sense that step one is just being aware of it. But yeah, I would say, like, whenever you go into the gym, first few warm-up boulders, just think about like moving your hip and shoulder together, almost as if you had an iron rod, like connecting the two. And especially, like, you seem like a fairly intuitive mover in a lot of ways. Like, a lot of what you do, from how I view it, comes out of intuition. I mean, you've been climbing a long time too, so that's pretty normal. And you've got a decent athletic background. But what I've seen with a lot of people, this one, like, corrects really quickly. It's kind of great. Like, it's one of my favorite things, like, to see in someone, because I'm like, oh, dude, like, do this drill for like a month and then you'll literally never think about it again. Because the second you do it, and if you just pay attention to it, you're like, oh, what have I been doing? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things. So yeah, I would say, like, warm-ups, first five boulders of the session, just like really overemphasizing twisting hips and shoulders. And then if you're trying a hard boulder with a big twist on it, maybe think about that. Like, I wouldn't, when you're at project level, don't think about like trying to change new techniques on the fly. Like, maybe when you're like working a boulder problem, that's fine for individual movements, but practice and performance are very different. When we are learning something new, our short-term performance will drop. So,
right.
Yeah. What I recommend is open up a session, do some twisting drills. Honestly, you'll do it and you'll be like, yeah, this just feels right. Why would I ever do the other thing again? And from what I've seen, it like auto-corrects pretty cool. Fast.
Okay, great. I love that. Yeah, I'll just work that into my gym session starting tomorrow.
Okay, so this next one, this is like, I'll probably say this is my favorite about everything because I love this stuff. So this next one, you high step a lot, which, by the way, how do you feel about your hip mobility?
I don't know how I feel about my hip mobility. I know that I've been working on my hip mobility for quite some time. Just, I do a lot of frog stretches, you know, and like kind of box stretches and sideways splits and some dynamic mobility and that kind of thing, trying to understanding that the more open my hips can get, the closer I can get to the wall, the better I'll be able to rest on steeper stuff at the red and this kind of thing. So like in theory, I've known that that's a way to unlock performance without having to increase fitness or finger strength or whatever. And so I have been doing a lot of stretching on that, but you know, how am I applying it to the wall and these kinds of things? I don't know. I do high step a lot. I don't know. I like that. But that's a note that I do until you just mentioned that. Like it's, I didn't think about it earlier when you said like, how do your friends talk about your climbing? But I have heard more times than one, you know, hey, can you find some lower feet on that rest? Or can you find some lower feet for that move? I don't know what it is about taking big high steps. I just like the feel of it or something like that. I like to rock over like on a knee and like cover some ground. But it's interesting that you noted that as well.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. There's a bit of like a theme that runs through your climbing in that you high step a lot and you also use feet at the same level a lot, which is really interesting because that's not like, yeah, they just, not a good or bad thing, but just a thing. The way I tend to look at technique and move sets is that I don't think there's so much like an idyllic one way to do anything. But I think we should be able to have as many tools in our toolkit as possible. Because, yeah, it's like any time, like climbing's weird. It's not built for humans. Like they're just rocks. They are physical puzzles that we need to be able to get through. We need to. Our self-worth right. is dependent on them. And yeah, like, so we need as many tools as possible. Like I don't really rank too many tools higher than others, but when I look at your legwork, that is like one of the things that really jumps out at me and that I would really like to help you develop just more tools in your toolkit for how you use your legs.
Love it. Yes.
So yeah, with high stepping specifically, this to me is something that's kind of like kind of cool. So there's this thing that all of us do in bad situations and like situations where we have disadvantaged situations. So for instance, like a lot of people, when they grab really small holds, like let's say you have left hand on jug, you reach up, do a big move, grab a really tiny crimp. We all do the same thing. We put 100% of our focus into that tiny crimp. We forget what our feet are on. We forget that our left hand's on a giant jug. We become a one-armed climber and we just try and squeeze the life out of this thing, which is the worst thing you can do. Why would we put all of our effort into the worst thing, right? But we do. That's like, that is just natural. Like, and high steps are the exact same. Like most of us, whenever we high step, we're like, ooh, this foot's really high. Let me put all of my effort and intensity into this. And also we kind of like, because in climbing, like we don't realize how high our feet actually are. So if you're like high stepping up at like, you know, let's say around your like belly button height, you're like, yeah, that's like kind of a high foot, but that's not crazy. But imagine if you were like, if you're trying to step onto a box at that height, like if you had like a big wood desk in front of you at that height, and I was like, hey, put one foot on it. And now without using your other leg at all, try and stand up on this. Like most people wouldn't go right. anywhere. But with high steps, that's what we do. And that's like watching you, it's super interesting. Anytime you high step, you actually, like whenever you go to move, you basically just lift the low foot off and you never push off of it. Most of your power should be coming from the low leg, because what we want to do is we want to jump off of that low leg to get us high enough to where now our high leg is in a good advantageous position to be strong and powerful and to continue the movement.
Yeah.
So like low leg creates the power, high leg just follows through.
So in terms of like rocking over that high leg, like getting your knee to kind of rock over and you're still generating the motion, the momentum from the low leg and maybe to some extent the hands, I'm not quite sure, but like to the point where then you're in like more of a pistol squat advantageous, like kind of stronger position on the high leg. Am I understanding that?
Essentially. I mean, we're going to use some momentum. So ideally we're going to have some like use that low leg to create speed. Have you ever done like rolling pistols to where you like roll on your back and then like roll up and stand up with momentum?
No, but I can picture it based on your description.
They're great. They're a really great regression for pistols because that extra momentum, gets you out of that bottom position that's so hard for everyone and lets you kind of like do it at more or less like 50% effort. And then you get the full range of motion movement just at a lower intensity. And so this is the exact same principle. We get to explode off the low leg. We get to shoot ourselves out of that bottom position that is so hard on a pistol and so hard for like a high step. We get to basically cheat that by using our other leg that's already on the wall.
Yeah.
And since you high step so much, like this, I think is crucial. And it's really funny, like in all the videos you sent me, I watched all the gym ones first and immediately it jumped out. I was like, oh, he doesn't use his bottom push foot. This is great. And then you sent me the force video and I looked at that big bump move at the very top where you do that huge left-hand move off a high step. And even from 80 feet down on the ground, you can immediately see your right leg like just completely like comes off as you're doing that bump. I'd be really interested to see what happens if you try and initiate that move by driving with the low leg for that high step move on like the red point crux of the force.
I will. It's interesting. It's just like what you're talking about, like with the crimps or whatever, like we focus on the hardest thing, which I think psychologically makes sense. You know, like this is the hardest thing. Let me put all my attention on it. But then you're like leaving behind like the other three really strong and good points of contact. So if I do the throw, the left-hand throw beta, as opposed to like a Dave Scott, actually like swim the right hand up and don't throw with the left hand. I think either could be viable and I'd love your thoughts on them. But if I do the left-hand throw, it is pretty reachy and it feels like my right foot could just like come right off, but maybe that's more mental than anything else. I think that's a really good mental experiment for me to try, which is like make that move pushing off the right foot. That's, by the way, in a massive like great kind of jug pocket. And the left foot is like on this kind of like just little ripple out there. And my focus, of course, has just been on the left foot because it's on the less good, on the less good spot, you know? So yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing to think about. And I will try that when I go out in a few days.
Well, I mean, yeah, and this, like this, I love that because that just like completely, like, and this is, like I said, this is something all of us do, but like, you're like, I have this giant bucket foot, but I am focusing on this tiny little smear over here. Yeah. Like, one thing I think that is really useful, anytime you fall, like I love to ask the question, what were all four points doing? Or if I'm working with someone, I can clearly see what's happening. I'll be like, what was your left arm doing? And they'll be like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, let's pull back on and like think about that, like try and just do something with it. And then like they may do the move. They're like, wow, I wasn't even like, I took my left hand off the hold entirely and it was a jug. Like, cause I was so focused on like finding position that like I let go of the other hand.
Yeah. I love that. I'm hyped. I'm going to try that. I'll be at the gym before I go out to the project. And so I'm just going to try to find some little mini replicas or scenarios where I can just kind of practice that because it's going to feel foreign having now done that move at the top of the force so many times and just like now it's like muscle memory is like, okay, rock over and put everything I can on the left, but now, you know, to almost like rewrite that script and try to focus more on the right, I think will be great. And I'll try to get a little bit of that feeling, that sense of it before I go out to the project on Wednesday.
I think that's a great idea and something that's important to keep in mind. And you may already be familiar with this, but anytime you change beta, it's really important to remember that, you know, let's say if you're like, oh, I'm going to try it pushing off the low leg. It's really important to remember that it's going to maybe feel harder the first time compared to this other move that you've done, you know, 40 times. Like, so you have to kind of compare it to how did this move feel, you know, the first session versus how does this feel now?
Yeah, good point. That ties back into how I get discouraged, whether if a sequence doesn't feel good or I'm not making quick progress on it, I always decide that, you know, or quickly decide that, you know, that's probably not the right one. So thank you. I appreciate the primer on that. As was the case, by the way, when I tried Dave's beta, and I only tried it once. It's in that video where like I kind of cut feet going into the sequence, but then I got them back on and then tried it. And and it did feel harder, but I think objectively, I think it's easier moves because Dave knows what he's talking about. He's like, yes, not any single move in the way I do it is as hard as the way you're doing it. And so I think I can believe that. But it felt harder because I just hadn't done it. You know, it was just like weird to like cross through with a right hand and try and get that little hook as a Gaston more than like a left hand side pull. But I think if I did it 10 more times, it would reveal itself to be easier. And similarly, I think with the just putting the weight on the right foot rather than the left foot, I could see how it won't feel as good because I just haven't done it as many times. So I'm quickly discovering that my next time out on the project is not going to be a red point day, but day let's camp out at the top and really try a bunch of things for a while day.
Maybe. We'll see. I've got another, like, I think it could be. Because it's like, I think the low push foot's important.
Yeah.
Like, also, I just think that's important for your climbing in general. But like, I don't think that's the biggest thing on the force as far as what I'm seeing. But yeah, low push foot. And when we go through videos, there's a couple times where it shows up. So I can kind of like show that as well. All right. So kind of going down the list. How do you feel like your composure is as you get pumped?
Man, I think on the force, it's become an issue, like a confidence issue when I get to the top, when I'm pumped, where I feel like I'm like, oh, here's the place where I fall. I think in the past on other routes, I've had pretty good success recognizing the pump and just like pushing through it and like really kind of like, you know, going a morte and, you know, making it to the chains. On the force, it's become a little bit, maybe a little bit more charged or something like that, a little more loaded, where if I get up to that final rest, which isn't a very good rest at the last bolt there, if I'm not feeling really good, I kind of just like, it gets a little defeatist if I'm being honest. So I think maybe there's something about how I'm managing it on the force that's a little bit different. Of course, this is the hardest route that I've ever tried to do, so it may just be different. Like, it's just a different level of needing to go to that dark place or dealing with it. But I would say that I'm doing a pretty good job recovering on rests, the first two rests of the force, and then leaving the second rest and punching into kind of that sequence of like long moves that's maybe like 11 plus climbing up to the last bolt seems fine. And then I get up to that last rest, and if I don't feel great, yeah, I kind of have a hard time thinking like, okay, am I going to have enough to put together this last sequence, which is not the hardest moves on the route. It's weird. Psychologically, I'm like, I should be able to do it, but I just so consistently have not been able to do it. I think that it's creating kind of a negative script, you know?
Man, and that's absolutely a thing. Okay, so that kind of lines up with what I'm seeing a little bit. And, you know, and I think it's important to recognize this. Like, it's important to recognize when what your mindset is when you're going up and climbing. Like, are you going up there to send, or are you going up there to like just hope this is the time you don't fall?
Right.
So one thing I think that would be worth trying on the force is, honestly, I would try shaking for less time. I don't like, and it's fair if this sounds like a bad idea. This earlier, I was kind of talking about how people in the red really get caught in these like different traps. And one thing that happens is first time you start climbing at the red, you're just like, I'm pumped on everything. This is terrible. Like, everything is hard. I fall off of every hold. And then you get like a little bit of endurance, and then you start being able to shake on things, and you're like, oh, hold on. Like, I can just like camp and shake on this like slopey thing now. This is great. And there are slopey things everywhere.
Right.
And what ends up happening is that people just start getting themselves into longer and longer red point efforts because they're just shaking for an eternity. Like, when I watch you on that thing, you're climbing for like a sixth of the amount of time that you're on the wall.
Yeah.
I would be really interested to see. And the thing is, it's like, no matter how good a hold is, like, unless you're like knee barring, hand jamming, or like in a no hand stance, like, it is physically taxing on your body. And if I said, hey, go do a boulder problem, hop on the treadwell, go move on the treadwell for 10 minutes, and now go do another boulder problem, that would sound terrible.
Right.
But if I was like, hey, do that same thing, but only 4 minutes on the treadmill, suddenly you're like, okay, that's maybe more doable. And that's kind of what's happening right now. And especially with, if you shake so much that you're always feeling like, oh, I have all of my pump dissipated and I feel good. Like, you are physically draining your body. You are systemically tiring yourself to some degree. And it wouldn't surprise me. Like, man, honestly, I would go out there, like, have a timer running on the ground. Anytime you get to a rest, like, have your belayer tell you when 2 minutes is up, take a big breath and go to the next rest. Like, do that. I would be, and honestly, even like the last rest before the red point crux, maybe even less time, like 60 seconds.
Whoa, dude.
Like, you,
this is like,
I know. Yeah.
It's so weird sounding to me, but I can also understand why you're saying this, because I am on the route for an eternity. And when I get to the top there, I am bodily tired. And just like the last time out, this is not something that's happened often. So, like, who knows, maybe I just had a weird time, but like on the second rest, which is like a really good rest, relatively speaking, it's not amazing, but it's decent.
Yeah.
I was resting there for a while and I was watching the pump kind of dissipate and I was feeling good. But then like, I noticed like my lower back was hurting and like my core was kind of getting tired. And I'm like, God, what's going on there? You know? And like, I think it's just, to your point, there's some diminishing returns or there's a bit of a trade-off. Like, okay, well, my forearms are feeling a lot better, but then my quads and my hamstrings and my core and my glutes and like all these big muscles in my body are freaking fatigued. You know, maybe that is, you know, that kind of cumulative fatigue is kind of sabotaging me a little bit as I get to the top, and I need to make long moves with engaged core and using my legs, like you're saying, like pushing off on these things. So I think that's a great exercise, and maybe we'll see, like maybe it's not quite long enough or whatever, but I like the idea of saying 2 minutes at the first one, 2 minutes at the second one, 1 minute at the top, and just seeing how it goes. I mean, it's not something that I probably would have done, but it's funny when you say that, like, I also recall, like, I think you and Chris, this is a while back, but you did an episode that I listened to many times. That's like about climbing different grades at the red. And I think it was like going from like 5:12, learn how to rest. And then 5:13 was like, learn when not to rest, I think was like one of the big kind of takeaways.
Yes.
So now it's all coming back, you know, I probably should have just re-listened to some of these older episodes you've done and saved myself some time.
You know, if only we could learn from other people's mistakes. And here's the thing, when you do this, you will likely feel, you're going to feel a little pumped in your forearms. Like, you need to be able to separate out your subjective feeling of how you perceive yourself to feel and your objective outcome. Like, yeah, when you leave that first rest, you're going to be like, I'm not ready. I normally stay here for 5 minutes. Like, I want to be completely calm and ready and, like, you know, hone my mind, be here. Like, I want to do all this. It's not going to feel like enough, but I want you to objectively pay attention to how powerful do you feel going to that fifth bolt when you do that big stand-up move? Like, how much energy do you have? Like, really pay attention to those things, because you'll probably be getting, you know, maybe some alarm bells going off of just like, oh, I don't know. But just try and stay calm, keep breathing, and try and pay attention to the objective results of what's happening. Because, like, yeah, I think like watching you on it, this was the biggest thing for me. Like, yes, we could be nitpicky and like, be like, hey, let's be a little more efficient here. I'd like for you to shift gears, you know, in this section, bunch of little things. But to me, this was a big enough thing that I was like, ooh, this, like, I think this needs to be addressed first.
Yeah. I love that. I will go out there on Wednesday and I'll have Thomas set a timer and I'll just hold myself to a couple minutes on those rests and just see how it goes. I mean, it'll be information coming in. I think it is interesting too, because no doubt I will feel less recovered when I pull into the next section. And I guess what you're saying is it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of where does it get me in relation to the chains? And so, you know, if I'm a little less recovered, but I have just a little bit more bodily, you know, at the top, who cares if I feel less recovered, if it's getting me up higher. So I think that's interesting, man. I remember talking to Adam Ondra, and one of the things he said too was like, he will often not rest very long if he feels like he can just punch through the next section. And I kind of remember thinking like, oh yeah, that's how he climbs so fast. But it's not necessarily about climbing like really fast. It's just about keeping in mind that like not every rest needs to be have a goal for full recovery.
Totally. You know, and I think there's even value in having the constraint of, you know, go into this on Wednesday, like tell yourself like, okay, I'm going to have 2 minutes. Like the second you hit that big smiley rest at the fourth, third, whatever that is, Man, remind yourself, I've got 2 minutes. Let's like deep breath, slow it down, calm down, like relax the hands, get locked into that as fast as you can. And I think there's some value to that as well. Like just saying, hey, I don't have all day. Like how much can I get back quickly?
Totally. And I think that one will be okay for me. Although that is like the rest that's right before the hardest moves on the route. I'm now doing ground to that rest so efficiently that I actually think 2 minutes is probably going to feel okay there. Where I think that it might not feel as good is
so
like
too.
After I pull those crux moves and get up to that following rest. And then I also do like another two bolts to get to the next rest. Cutting those down, there might be a little bit more kind of mental discomfort, like pulling off of those rests and saying, okay, I'm going to keep moving, but I'm going to play with it. I love it. I think this is really important. I need to continue to remind myself, and I truly do believe this, like I'm not in a race to send this route. Like I chose the force intentionally because I knew it was going to be quite hard for me. I think if I wanted to send a 513 quickly, I maybe could have grabbed Taste the Rainbow or something. You know, I wanted this to be like a full value experience for me. And as some of my friends have said, and actually Chris messaged me on this as well, because I was like, he was encouraging me to go back to like kind of a prolonged low pointing phase. And I was like, I don't know, man, like, I just feel like I'm getting so close on this. I should just keep trying. And he was like, look, you don't want to just get lucky on this one. You know, you don't want it to just like all come together and kind of like send it by the skin of your teeth. If you want this to be like a real learning experience, like take the time so that you can like do it and like do it with confidence, which I haven't gotten a shot of that confidence yet. I did earlier when I was making like quick progress. I was like, oh yes, you know, this is going. Now I've been stalled for a little while at this and I'm coming off of like the holiday break and all that. So I should probably cut myself some slack. But the bigger point is if it takes another season, but I'm developing tactics that are going to help me as I go on to the next thing, whatever that thing might be, then it's well worth it. So I love the idea of experimenting with shorter rests and managing the feeling and like what it kind of does to my mindset of pump. So I'll do that. You think 2 minutes on those and then 1 minute on the top, and that's something I should try.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I mean, those don't have to be hard and fast, but I think that would be a good place to start. Also, I like the awareness that you have around resting at the first smiley, because that's like, that was the other thing that I saw, because you like hustled through and you got relaxed pretty quickly in the video I saw. And I was like, man, like, I feel like he's just hanging out almost, out of that thing that we all do. Like when you climb at the red, where you're like, oh, it's a jug. Jug means stop, like red light.
Right.
Yeah. It seemed almost like it was more of just like out of habit than out of necessity.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I love it. Okay. Sick.
Cool. Yeah. All right. This will be kind of the last thing I'll say, and then we can kind of go towards video. So the last thing, when you look at really good sport climbers, one thing they do well, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, is like they have different gears that they can exist in. Like they can, I mean, the best sport climbers are the ones that can really toggle back and forth quickly. The ones who, even when they have like, you know, they could be in the middle of a crux, but if they have two easy foot moves, you can see them just relax, compose themselves, take some breaths, do these two foot moves, and then lock it back up, flip the switch, try hard again. Like that is the mark of absolute excellence. And it's so, so challenging. And I think the more gears that you can, you know, have in your gearbox, essentially, so that like you can be like, hey, here's me just absolutely cruising, breathing, relaxed. I'm essentially recovering on the wall while moving. And then it's like, okay, this is slightly harder terrain, but I'm still composed. This is hard terrain, but I'm staying relaxed. I can like, you know, if an easy section happens, I'm not going to be so revved up that it takes me 2 minutes just to get to recovering. You know, all these different things. And when I watch you climb, a big thing that stands out, and this is like, I view this as a very long-term development. Like, I would like to see more gears for you. Like, you're very good at, you can rev up quickly. Like, in a lot of those sport climbing videos, you're good at just like ramping up and trying hard. And then when you get to a rest, you can calm it down pretty fast. And those are kind of the two main speeds I see you operating at. Like, I would love to see, and especially like, you know, a big note I have like with a star next to it here is that when I watch you on 12A, it should look different than when I'm watching you on 13A. Like, it should look much more relaxed, much more composed. You should look like, it should look like it is a lower level. And right now it like, it looks like you go into it almost with a similar level of intensity. And so, yeah, that's like, that's something that I would like to see you develop over time. And I think the best way to do it is climbing a broader base. So like, can we do 11 pluses just like going up, honestly, like kind of climb them in a contrived way in the sense of like, go up anytime you get to a rest. Like if it's 11, you know, if it's 11C or under, when you get to a rest, like go up, chalk each hand and shake each hand twice, keep moving. Like, it's okay if you're a little pumped. You're a good climber. Keep going. Like, and then kind of like see what happens, especially internally. Like, how does that feel? Like, do you get a little overwhelmed? Good. Like, let's learn how to just like kind of take that, deal with it, figure out like, find what pace you can comfortably exist at with a little bit of discomfort at that level. Because man, so much of hard climbing, like the Force is a good example. You know, there's that section up high that is like 11 plus climbing. Man, I want to see you up there just like relaxed, like, you know, shaking a hand between each move, just calm, comfortable. Like, if this was what was separating you from the anchors, this should feel like victory jugs to you. Like, that's what I would like to see. And the more of those gears we can get, just the more efficient and effective you're going to be at different grade levels. And especially for hard climbing, where you're climbing a lot of different difficulty ranges, you're going to be able to kind of toggle in and out rather than just saying, hey, I've got this like try hard, quick breathing, punch it gear, and I'm just going to use that as much as I can.
Like it. I like it. So essentially, like, is that a middle gear, or is it just trying to keep it kind of as low gear as possibly saying like, because I do feel on the Force, like I'm either in like kind of battle mode, my version of that, at least, where I'm like, you know, hyped, trying hard.
Yeah.
And then I immediately try to like fully relax onto something. And then I go right back into that. But essentially, like between bolt 5 and 9, that kind of 11 plus, 12 minus, I don't know, you know, it felt more like 12B when I was originally on it. And now it feels more like 11A because I've just done it so many times. But basically just trying to climb it fairly relaxed and a little bit of shakes and that kind of thing, just confident pacing.
Yeah. So, you know, you'd ask, is this like a middle gear or a low gear? I think for you, I'd like to eventually have both. Like I said, better sport climbers have multiple. Like, right. I think you have that, your high gear right now is good and it's pretty effective. And I like that. I think right now, if we're just looking at the Force, a middle gear would be nice. Like, if I see you on 12A, I should be able to watch you and be like, oh, that's a guy who's projecting 513.
Sure.
And I know that that sounds silly to say, but it's like, you should look confident and competent on it. You know, I really love trying to mimic great athletes. I think it's a really good way to go. And so that's something that I'll do sometimes. Like, I'll say like, okay, like what would Adam Ondra look like on this? If you don't want to move that fast, you know, what would Seb Bowen look like on this? How would he climb on this? Like, you know, really confident, big, powerful movements, very sure of himself, like great clipping. That man is great at clipping. It's a little bit easier to almost have that alter ego of like, what would this person do? Let me mimic that, rather than being like, how do I change myself to be this thing?
Totally. That's a great mental trick. Well, I'll implement that when I'm out on Wednesday, and I guess we'll see what happens. But I really like how clear and easy that is going to be for me to try. And like, I'll immediately get feedback on it. So Yeah, I'm pumped.
Ooh, a great way to do this, actually. I actually like doing it on top rope too. Like one of my favorite ways to warm up when I have to do like, when I am practicing a new skill, like, and actually if you warm up at the Solar Collector, yeah, I'll go up like, you know, Mona Lisa Overdrive, something like that, hang your own draws at the top, come down, and then do it as a double or, you know, rest as long as you want. But then climb up it and then you don't have to think about clips. You can just think about like, okay, we're going to get in this middle gear. I'm going to be composed, going to climb well. I don't need to stop and shake at every single thing. Like I'm going to be assertive with my foot movements, strong breathing, but I'm not, you know, I'm not racing. Like, and that can be a good way to go because it just takes a couple other elements out of it. Like one, you're not worried about sending it. You're on top rope. You're fine. And like, also, you know, you're not thinking about clipping or anything weird.
I really like it. Yeah. Great. You know, I haven't been in the earlier days. We were starting over there to warm up. I've lately just been going to the dark side and like doing some stuff on the flashboard and then like bolt to bolting the force brushing, you know, and maybe linking together like a few of those bolts at the top kind of in that like 11 plus range in order to just kind of finalize the warm up and then I'd give a couple goes of it, you know, the next couple hours. Is there a way to simulate that, do you think, like while like in that middle section of the force, or do you think it would be a good experiment or just beneficial for me to go over and hit some of those 11s over at Solar Collector first?
Honestly, I think it would be good. Also, I could be off on this, you know, and everyone has differing opinions, but I know a few other climbers who agree with me on this. Like, I'm actually not a huge fan of using a flashboard before the first pitches of climbing, only because like we tend to use whatever is warm, like our body. Like, if you ever go climbing after a run, it's kind of interesting. You just claw with your feet so much. You're like, oh God, if only I could be this climber all the time, because your legs are super warm and your arms aren't warm yet. But I've found, like, personally, I literally just can't warm up on a flashboard before I start sport climbing because I get super pumped. Like, I find myself just immediately swapping to front wheel drive because like my hands feel really great, but the rest of my body isn't warm and coordinated yet. So I'm a big fan of doing a few easy climbs and then flashboarding. And actually, I was talking with Sigris not too long ago about this because we were talking about route warmups. And it was funny because I was like, oh, I like doing this for warm-up. He was like, wait, hold on. He's like, you still like doing easy stuff, right? He's like, because I like easy stuff. Like, I like doing like a 5-10 to start my day and like easy climbing. So yeah, I think it's like, I think there's a lot of value in doing, honestly, even just one easy pitch, like go over, run up, super pinch. Remember how hard 10D can be? Like, you know, one of those over that there. One. And honestly, like, dude, yeah. Like, go up it, maybe do it twice. And then go over to the dark side. Like, yes, it takes a little time, but honestly, I think it would be worth it.
Yeah. And like one of my little side projects is I want to try to flash Superfly. So if nothing else, maybe give me an opportunity to go over there, get warm and, you know, Thomas can warm up on Supa and I can kind of try to absorb as much as I can while he's doing it. Or if I feel good, maybe give it a try and then move over to the dark side.
I think that's a great idea. And actually that's a note I have for you. Like, I'd like to, like, whenever it starts getting warmer and when you're not as worried about performance season, I would love to see you kind of build out your pyramid a little bit more, and especially like in a stylistic way. So the way I like to look at pyramid building for sport climbers is like, man, do a bunch of onsighting. So for you, that's, you know, 11 plus 12A, that range. Get to the point to where onsighting feels like you have either maxed out what you can do in the moment where you're like, oh shoot, like, I just did a 12A, or I just onsighted far from God, 12B, amazing. That feels like real feather in my cap. I don't know if I can go above that where I'm at right now, or maybe just until you feel like you're like, I've done enough onsighting, like I'm a little bored with it. Let's go up a notch, then start seeing how hard of second go sends can you do? Because as you've raised that lower level, suddenly you have a higher level of competency. Yeah. So now it's like, okay, second go sends, same exact thing. And then like, okay, like, how hard of a route can I do in a day? Can I get to where I can do 12 C's in a session? That'd be amazing. And keep doing that. And like, the thing is, motivation kind of helps fuel this a little bit because it's fun to gamify things. So initially you'll be like, oh, cool. Like, what can I do in a day? You start planning it out. And at a certain point you're like, oh, okay. Like I've done like 3 12 Cs in single sessions. This is cool, but I want to try harder now. Cool. Like, let's start actually like trying harder things then. And I think that's a really nice kind of more organic way to ramp things up, because by the time you get back to projecting again, you've got a ton of confidence. You remember what it's like to clip anchors. You remember what it's like to tie in and say, hey, I'm here to send this rock climb. I'm not here to try.
Yeah.
Like, and that's such a powerful feeling. And also it's like, you know, you kind of get over doing things quickly. Like at a certain point, you're like, no, I want to like try something hard that's going to take me multiple days, multiple weeks kind of thing.
Yes. I love that. I'm honestly like, I'm so excited. It was like at the end of last fall / winter, because like kind of the season was good into like kind of early January. I was so ready to just like spend a couple months on the moon board and on the gym, because I just, you know, it just takes a toll going out to the project all the time and the drive and being on the same route and trying to keep psyched about incremental progress. And the spring season here is always so unpredictable and short, and you know, it'll be a few weeks probably at the most where we'll have ideal conditions. And I'm still happy to go out to the dark side. It stays in the shade and all that. And if there's still stuff to work out, but at the point at which I think, you know, where I'm very close to, which is like, I know my beta, it'll be nice to recognize like, oh, it's May and it's 70 degrees. Like, let's go do some other stuff. And I think I'll really welcome that. I think that'll be like a nice palate cleanser. And I'm excited to build out the pyramid. I don't have much of a pyramid at all. It's a bit of a skyscraper. So I'm excited to build out some of those like low to mid 12s and implement, hopefully, not only the tactics that I've picked up on the force, but also some of the fitness that I've been building. And I haven't been able to like, there hasn't been a barometer. Like, as I've just basically been on the force. So it'll be fun to see if I do a 12C in a session or 12B in a session, which I haven't done. Can I flash some 12As? That'd be really rad to see. I hope the answer is yes, because then it'll mean that like all this work that I've been putting in is applying itself to the rest of my climbing. But I don't know, because I haven't tried.
You know, I think you nailed, really talked on something really important there. Like the idea of, you were like, man, end of season, I was so looking forward to the moon board. And yeah, like, dude, sport climbing is so mentally exhausting. Like, I think it's really important. Like, I think one, it's good to be able to, it's good to switch back and forth with bouldering, because you go from sport climbing where you're like, okay, like game face, we're going out, like we're going to go just shiver in the cold. I get to try my project two times. That's not nerve wracking. Like, hope I don't make two mistakes in a day, you know? And then it's like, I'm going to repeat this next weekend until like I get snowed out. Like,
yeah,
it is. It's so satisfying when things go well, and I love sport climbing, but man, it takes such an emotional toll. And then you like switch to bouldering and you're like, wait, we just sit under boulders and eat gummy bears? Like, and I pull on whenever I feel. I can try 60 times in a day.
Right.
Amazing. Like, why would I ever sport climb again? You know, I think
totally.
Like, I think these natural cycles are so important. And I think that going around and being like, okay, cool, like I've never flashed 12A. I want to hit that milestone. So go out, try a bunch. Like, that's super important. I was talking with a client yesterday who wants to try and flash his first V13. And we were talking about it. He hasn't spent a lot of time trying to flash boulders before. And it's something I enjoy. And we were talking about it. And I was like, yeah, like, you have to just try a lot. Like, you know, I had one season where I really wanted to flash V10. And I picked out like 15 of them. And man, some of them, I was like, I had no chance. Like, you know, I would try and I was like, oh, that felt hard. And then like in an hour, it's like, I still wouldn't have done all the moves. I was like, well, next. But then by the end, it's like, I had managed to succeed on two of them. So it's like, it is worth keeping in mind, like, man, some things are just not going to fit you. Some things that sometimes it's not going to be your day. So yeah, for going for these benchmarks or these milestones, like, yeah, pick out a couple 12As, because some will work great. Some just won't. Some will just, you know, you'll misread chalk, something like that. Little slip ups happen. But yeah, I think that is such a fun way to go from projecting to be like, oh, cool. Like, I want up my flash grade. I want up my on-sighting. I want up my second go sense. And these things all make you better at red pointing. Like, on-sighting especially, like, there's so much, things go wrong red pointing all the time. I mean, how many times have you heard the story of a pro who's like, oh man, you know, like hit this hold poorly. I had to like make up a new beta on the fly. I've never felt this pump before in my life. And I managed to just pull it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's because they're really good at onsighting, at like just staying composed when shit's hitting the fan, being like, cool, not going to lose my head. We're just going to keep moving. One hand move at a time, 1 foot move at a time. And like onsighting really builds that resiliency.
I love it. Thomas is going to have to play along here because I've got some new ideas for how that day is going to go. I'm going to, at least as of this moment, we'll start at Solar Collector, do a couple laps on Mona Lisa or something like that. Maybe give a rip on Superfly and then head over to the dark side. And I won't need to bolt it, which is good. So I will save time there. I'll just hop on and do quick rests and then either send the thing or hang out up top and try some of what we've been talking about with like keeping the weight on the right leg, on the better hold, and practice some of that, man. I'm really hyped. This is such good stuff. Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. Should we take a look at some videos and try to bring all of this together a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to say I can share my screen.
All right, that there wraps up this conversation portion of this Pro Clinic on analysis with Nate Drolet. As you hear at the end here, he's about to share his screen and dive into some climbing videos that I sent him, both from when I was on my project as well as some things that he had me shoot for him at the gym when I was just doing some set problems like V3s to V5s and a couple things on the moon board. And it's really cool. So I'm putting those videos along with his analysis of those videos up on Patreon. And you can watch those. If you're a Patreon, you've got access right now. If you're not a patron, you can get access for free. You can get a 7-day free trial. So you can actually pop over there right now and watch this conversation with Nate as he talks through some of my movement on these boulders. And it was really enlightening stuff. I'm telling you, like the things he sees when I look at a video of myself or I look at other people climb, I'm not noticing what he's noticing, obviously, because I am not a professional coach with a specialty in movement like he is, but it was still like almost like magic. You know, when you see a good magic show and you're like, what, how did you see that? How did you do that? This was kind of like that. So I highly recommend you pop over there and check that out. And while you're there, by the way, you'll get instant access to more than 40 hours of other really banger stuff. Pro clinics with Ravioli Biceps, Allison Vest, Hazel Finlay, Dr. Tyler Nelson, Jordan Cannon, God, so many more. I mean, I can't even list them all. There's a bunch of them. The library of pro clinics is very big. And also bonus episodes. So bonus interviews with Adam Andra, Chris Sharma, Alex Honnold, Nina Williams, Dave McLeod, everybody that I've had on, you can just look back. They've all got a bonus episode that comes with their regular interview. So you can get access to all of that. And also the last thing I'll plug here for you to go check out Patreon is that anybody who signs up for Patreon in this month is going to automatically be entered to win a pair of Scarpa shoes of their choice from their spring line. That would include climbing shoes, hiking boots, trail runners, all the good stuff that Scarpa just released for the spring. Anyone who joins as a Patreon, by the way, that means also just as a free trial, your name will be in the hat. It's not going to be a very big hat, I'm telling you, and your chances of winning are pretty good. So go ahead, check out all this bonus content, check out the videos with Nate, and also maybe score yourself a free pair of Scarpas. You can do all of that over at patreon.com/thestruggleclimbingshow. Or that link is right down there in your podcast notes. Now, if you want to work with Nate as a coach, he does a lot of in-person stuff in the Salt Lake area, if that's you. Or I think he's still taking some remote clients as well. I've got a friend of mine here in Louisville who just recently worked with him. Maybe if he's got the bandwidth, he can write out a plan for you and analyze some of your movement like he did for me here in this conversation. So you can connect with Nate. All that information is in your notes as well. And you can also learn a lot more about what Nate has to say by checking out the Power Company podcast that he does with Chris. Such good stuff over there. And make sure you are following this podcast right here, which I think you probably are because you're listening, because next month, Nate brings it all home with a pro clinic on movement, as he's going to look at some common barriers that climbers of all levels and styles hit when it comes to their technique. And he'll be offering up some really actionable and easy to implement drills that will help us to change our habits and improve our technique and our movement on rock and on plastic so that we can level up without having to get an ounce stronger in our fingers. That's what I'm talking about. It's really good stuff. I hope you guys check it out. The Struggle is carbon neutral in partnership with the Honnold Foundation and is a proud member of the Plugtone Audio Collective, a diverse group of the best, most impactful podcasts in the outdoor industry. This show was produced and hosted by me, Ryan Devlin. Thank you again so much for supporting the show. You are awesome. I hope your training and climbing are going great. And if you're struggling like I am, well, at least the struggle makes us stronger. I'll see y'all soon.